This episode is brought to you by HivePass. HivePass is the latest in membership management software that brings a radically different approach to how members join your organization, their experience as a member, and how you interact with them. Built by not only an app developer, but also a mountain biker, HivePass was made by a trail user for trail users. With an app-based platform, instant digital membership cards, ability to send push notifications to members, in-app trail status reports unique to your organization, HivePass is building the next generation of membership management software for your organization. Future additions to HivePass include an event system, automated custom trailhead signs, and much more. HivePass has been live in New Zealand and Australia for a few years, but just launched in Canada, and with this announcement, the United States. Over 50,000 trail users already use HivePass to support their local trail organization. HivePass is the world's first app-based membership management software built specifically for trail organizations. For all of the details, check out hivepass.app. That's www.hivepass.app, or download the HivePass app today. You're listening to Frontlines, a podcast for the people that truly make mountain biking happen. Not the riders, racers, or product designers, but the builders, advocates, and the often forgotten board members of your local mountain bike trail association. Before we dive into this episode, I wanted to highlight a link in the show notes. Hopefully by now you've had a chance to look into our current sponsor, HivePass. In the show notes, you'll not only find a link to them, but also a link to their articles page, so make sure you have a look at that. Now, the next two episodes will be spending some time in the birthplace of HivePass, New Zealand. So without any further delay, I'm your host, Brent Hillier, and this is episode 93 of Frontlines. I'm joined by Matt Ball. He's the chairperson of the Nelson Mountain Bike Club out in Nelson, New Zealand. And Matt's joining me right now from next to the ski hill. So I want to thank him first for just taking his time out of his day of skiing to jump on this call and have a chat. Hi, Matt. How's it going?
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Let's just get a little bit of a history of the Nelson Mountain Bike Club, if you don't mind starting us off, and a little bit of history about the area and the mountain biking in and around Nelson.
Well, we're currently the largest, I think we're the largest sporting club in all of Australasia at the moment, or club of any nature. We're 3,100 members, which kind of makes us a bit unique in that. So we're sort of larger than rugby clubs and other things that would be normally big in this part of the world. The history is that, and what makes Nelson kind of unique is actually the variety of riding areas it has. So it's not just like a lot of places you go and it's just like they have one piece or another piece of riding areas, and they're kind of, Nelson's kind of unique in that it has, you know, over in the real region that comes out of it, there's probably over 500 kilometers of trail. Depends where you draw the regional boundaries and how big the biking is, but it has, you know, it has our town trails, which have a certain reputation, and then it has our Richmond Hill trails, which are also, you can bike to from town. But then on top of that, It has a couple private bike parks, and it has one that the club manages. And then there's also these sort of epic rides that kind of Nelson's a center to go do these. And these are these multi-day cross range, like mountain range with huts on them. Like, you know, you put a pack on your mountain bike and go for, but they're actually mountain bike specific trails. So that's kind of what makes us unique.
Awesome. And I believe, if I'm correct, you're my first guest on the podcast from New Zealand. I don't know what it says that you're originally from Canada, so it wasn't too far of a stretch, I guess, for me to have you on the show. But how did you get involved with the Nelson Mountain Bike Club and advocacy in general?
I used to live in Vernon, BC. Before that, I lived in Squamish and Whistler. How I got into advocacy, I'll start, and then how I got to Nelson advocacy. But I moved to Vernon, and I was in a very fortunate position to have lots of time and passion. And I did the mistake, I guess, or the luck for the community of saying to my wife, we keep riding the same trails. It's boring me. And she looked at me and says, your skill set can change that. So I got involved with a bike club there, which is the North Okanagan Cycling Society. Fast forward 10 years in the chair and help grow the club into and help grow the trails and help grow the community there to a pretty substantial level. And then my wife had a job offer in New Zealand that we decided to take. And so we moved here. And then I was planning on stepping back a little bit from it, but I thought, again, I have the time and the skill set to help the biking community. Came here and I just volunteered. My plan wasn't to become the chair, but I ended up becoming chair. We unfortunately had a past chair passed away, and through nothing to do with biking, but he passed away, and they needed someone from the committee to step up. And so I did that gauntlet and step up. So that's how I became chair of Nelson Mountain Bike Club. It's interesting to compare, you know, Canada versus New Zealand, and like the issues are all the same in terms of like land access, trail build, interest user groups. They're all very, very similar. But sometimes they have just different things just because how the society deals with them in the region that changes. That highlights some of the things that Canada does that's really good. And it also highlights some of the stuff that Canada could improve on that you might learn from New Zealand and vice versa. So it's been really interesting to be, you know, at a decently high level in advocacy in both countries.
Yeah, I think your perspective is really unique with that. Like maybe to start off, when you first kind of came from Canada to New Zealand and started to get involved with the trail organization, was there anything that initially kind of jumped out at you as being different or unique compared to your Canadian experience?
There's definitely, I mean, this club was a much bigger club. So that the organization of the club was quite unique in that, it, you know, it was further along a path in being a sustainable club than the one in Canada was. I mean, I'm sure there are some other, you know, the North Shore Club or Warka or something could be pretty solid too, but they certainly had a bit more buy-in, like from the council or city. They had a bit more established relationships in that area than certainly in Vernon, but probably than in most Canadian cities outside, again, those two that I mentioned, or maybe Squamish. So that part was, you know, I just to set the learning for me on that, you know, the size of the club made a big difference. But the glaring things that really stand out that, you know, Canada does really well, like the, you know, IMBA standard trail build and, you know, going correspondingly the Whistler trail building standard, that's pretty, you know, it's adopted by the provincial parks. It's adopted by the Crown, so Rec Sites and Trails. That's something that Canada does really good. It's, you know, interesting when you remove yourself from that and then you put yourself in another country and they're kind of, they have a trail standard. So it's not like they don't have a trail standard, but it's not nearly as established as that. So when you go and riding trails and you come from a trail background here, there's some amazing trails. So I'm not bagging any trail builder or anything, but you could just tell that having that like sort of higher echelon, you know, standard means that when you're doing like the pro built trails, I'm not talking about the community trails so much, but like pro built trails, like you kind of would know what you're going to get. Whereas New Zealand is kind of a bit more, you're not quite sure. And they don't, might not have that same, you know, that same, I don't want to say quality because I'm really not backing New Zealand trails, but they might not have that same uniformity across the regions. And that's kind of pretty glaring when you're kind of used to, you know, if you're in Canada and there is differences between the areas and everyone talks about it, but you kind of have a trail grading system where you go somewhere and you know that if you're on a blue trail and you're a blue rider, that you're going to be doing just fine. And here's not quite like that. Kind of depend really, really regionally dependent. Like you might go somewhere and you go on a black trail and it's, you know, they use a 1 to 6 scale here. Like it's, and I think that's part of the issue that makes it challenging. Like Canada uses, you know, the IMBA trail standard, you know, green, blue, black, double black, pro. And here they use 1 to 6, which sounds like that should just be the same, just using the names. But the reality is in the way the New Zealand standard is like one is a paved path, so that's not even in mountain biking. So we wouldn't even call that a green. Two is a gravel road, so we're not really even calling that mountain biking. So it just starts to become mountain biking in three. So they're kind of forced to put all their trails in three, four, five, and six. So it makes it a bit challenging that way. Like, because you don't have, like, if you have a double black trail, like, let's say you take somewhere like Whistler, which would have a double black trail, and it would be pretty challenging, and that would be for a really good rider. And, you know, really good riders from all over the world would go, and they know that's going to be a challenging trail. What here is that they will bump it up into that six quite early. So an easier trail, it would be called a six than in Canada. Like, so when you go traveling there, like, but it also encompasses the pro line, which is like a trail that most people wouldn't ride in Canada or have the skills to ride. So that makes it a bit of a, that's one thing that you really notice when you come here. Like, cause like, you know, I remember like the first few rides I did, I went down this one that was like, I was just looking around for the double blacks, and I go down this one. I'm like, oh my God, what is this? How am I getting down this thing? And then, you know, then I was scared of double blacks. And then I do another one, another day. I'm like, ah, that was no problem. I don't know why, what the difference was, but I think it's just because the scales are so bunched up at the top,
yeah.
You know? And I think that's one thing that you really notice between the two countries. That's the biggest glare that I noticed between the two countries is actually in the trail grading and like that trail standard. And so that's a big hats off to Canada. And that's something where I think New Zealand can certainly improve on. And it's coming up. Like, we get trail audits and it's coming up. They're like, oh, they're not to grade, and they're trying to fix them. Same as everywhere, but here it's becoming like they're trying to fix them. And then the public is like, but now I don't know what trail I should be riding. Like, so it's actually kind of almost confusing it more.
Yeah.
They're like, you've made the harder trail, the easier trail hard by just bumping the grade up. And now I don't know what trails are suitable because they're, you know, they're all bunched up at the top. There's not that many on the low end, like the three and the four grade here. So that's it. Especially in Nelson's, it's quite steep. So where terrain isn't like, you know, it's not saying we can't have a green trail, but it's just a bit more challenging and certainly a lot more expensive to build one here than it would be in more forgiving terrain.
So tell me more about Wairo Gorge Bike Park and how is it unique?
The Wairo Gorge Bike Park started as a wealthy individual built a few of these all over the world that just for private use. And then he gifted them to the dock, which is the, in Canada's term, that would be to the Crown. And then they've been opened through a lease with the Nelson Mountain Bike Club. For I think it's a 50-year lease or year eight or something into that. And so it's they're pretty unique. It's they're all hand-built single track. It's some of the best hand-built single track in the world. And it's actually really interesting in terms of, like, I went back to that trail standard. A lot of the trail builders in New Zealand cut their teeth at the gorge because he had, you know, he spent money, and it actually really helped a lot of New Zealand mountain biking across the whole country because, you know, they all came to one place and learned from each other, which is kind of how you'd get like a good organic, you know, building culture. And so, you know, wherever you go in New Zealand and you say you're from Nelson, and if you're talking in the biking circles and you're talking to a builder, they'll be like, oh, I worked at the Wairo Gorge for this period and built this section of trail. So it's he's gifted it now, and it's running and has shuttles, and it's just, I mean, it is really a supreme place to ride. It's one of the reasons we moved here for my wife's work, but it's definitely one of the reasons that we choose to stay because it's just so good.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like a very large bike area as well. Like it's 70 kilometers of trail is what I'm kind of reading here, and 1,000 meters of descending. Like, this seems like a pretty unbelievable little plot of mountain biking trails.
Yeah, if you're like, it should definitely be on every mountain biking bucket list. Like, you know, I've biked a lot of places in the world, and there's lots of really awesome spots. So I'm not saying, you know, pick it over others in spots, but it certainly ranks in my top, you know, three places I've ever ridden. So it's that sort of notable kind of place when you go there and you finish at the end of the day and you're like, that was special. And not only the biking, but like there's lodges to stay there, and he has like there's some craft gone into it. So like there's like carvings in the trails, and interesting things to see, and the views are spectacular. So it's kind of like, it kind of really has like a real package. Like when you go there, you're like, oh yeah, that was definitely a memorable day. So yeah, it's, we're lucky to have it. That's all I can say. We're very lucky to have it.
And you mentioned that there was other areas that were kind of similar, like these bike parks were kind of built elsewhere. Is this all in New Zealand, or is this elsewhere in the world?
No, there's one in Seychelles, but it's not open to the public. And I only know from the maps that are left there. There's some in different, I think there's one in Peru. Don't quote me on that one, but I think there's one in Peru, and there's quite a few other ones actually that the same individual built for his personal use. So he basically just, either aged out or healthed out, and then was, donated this one. And he might've opened another one to the public, but not that I know of. I think this is the only one that's to the public. So it's kind of unique, 'cause you don't really get that build from, you get it in a commercial operation where they've run a chairlift. But then you get like the chairlift feel of a trail, you stutter bumps and the volume, and it's designed around that volume. Whereas like the Wairua Gorge, you kind of go there and it's like you get a backcountry experience each time, even though you're taking a shuttle up and, you're on the trail. There's like 25 people there for the day with you, maybe, it's 70 kilometers of trail. Like you only see each other at the bottom if you want to. Like you could easily just get lost for the day and you'll see each other on the shuttle ride up, but you're kind of in your own world of it's beautiful native bush, which is like what they call old growth in New Zealand. And it's just, there's some pine forest in it. It's a very special spot.
It's such a unique thing. Like I it's a little bit of like trickle down economics, but for mountain bike trails, I guess. And in the sense that like, this is not originally designed as a public space, it's like a mega yacht kind of suddenly being used as a ferry back and forth between two communities.
Exactly.
and then when you put that other aspect to it with bringing a bunch of trail builders together to actually construct it, what a neat kind of model for idea sharing. Like I think even when we look at like public trail networks that might have a huge capital investment in them, they're not built by multiple trail builders and multiple trail building companies. Like usually I think of like a place like Bentonville in Arkansas, where tons of money in Bentonville. And I always hear from advocates saying that like, man, if we could get like a tenth of the budget that Bentonville have, we could do so much more with it. But you've got this incredible trail network that's kind of built from the ground up, but it's built with, whether it's one trail at a time, it's not built with like overlapping trail builders in the same sense that it sounds like the Gorge was building.
Yeah. It's such a unique spot. It's actually, it's a bit of a challenge, like from an operating point of view, that the way it was built in a way that you wouldn't have thought of until like now we're managing it. It's because it was built like with someone who just sort of paid for it. Rather than built like on the organic level, like a group of citizens gets together and let's build a trail and let's grows and it grows and it grows. It doesn't have like that same, it's harder to tie in the community to it. Like I mean, it's something we really work hard at. It's like trying to get the community to use it more and see it as theirs and understand that they should be using it and they can use it and the reasons to use it. Cause that comes like, if you do an organic trail build, that just comes about, like you just have that, right? Like, if it's an old one, like your dad helped build some of the trails. And if it's a new one, you might've done it with one of your youth building groups or something. So, it's unique in that, but it makes it a bit of a challenge because, you're trying to create the people's, want to keep it going and understand how important it is and how it's part of the culture. So it is a bit of a challenge in that. But it's coming. Like we're accepting that challenge and trying to encourage people to use it and to contribute to it, volunteer at dig days out there. And it does have a good core group of volunteers that go do stuff out there. And it does have a good level of community support, but as always, it could always use more. It's not like, it's half an hour, 45 minutes out of town. So it's a bit more tricky you know, because the organic ones usually go right from this wherever people are living, and this is a bit further out. So, you know, those factors make it a bit more challenging to manage. But as I said, it's just so cool to have something like that, and it's really unique, and it's definitely should, as I said, should be on everyone's bucket list. It's just awesome.
Just looking at the website for the gorge, and you've got kind of 13 different route options that are kind of laid out. And what I really like is that it looks like they've got corporate sponsors, each of them as well. So it's a great way for you guys to kind of attach those routes to a bit of a funding model, which is wonderful. Why make those routes? Like, what was kind of the reasoning for doing it that way?
Sort of when it came, when it got, you know, handed over to the public, you know, through the club, it had a huge, like, sort of mystery about it. You know, who's this, why is this private club there? Like, you know, and, you know, sort of like, it's crazy hard and it's, you know, it's gnarly. And so, you know, the roots were put there to, like, sort of demystify some of that and make people, like, it doesn't have any beginner terrain, so it's not for beginners, but any intermediate rider can go ride there, and intermediate and above. And so the idea of the routes is to give people, like, they go there and they can kind of just figure out how to navigate it. And they're really clearly marked. Like, they have you choose route one, each trail sign that goes down that you'd hit says one on it. So you could stay on it the whole way down. And then it just gives people a really good intro to it. And then obviously the corporate sponsor is just a way of helping fund it and helping the, you know, give the local businesses a chance and a way to help out. So it's, I mean, I look at the corporate sponsors as too far. I think it's good for corporations, and I think it's good for the trails and the advocacy. I really think that's a good, those should be done in partnership. Like, they're giving back the same as, you know, I'm giving back volunteering. Yeah.
What's the relationship with the Nelson Mountain Bike Club with Nelson City Council? How long has that kind of relationship been around for, and what is the kind of dynamic there?
Well, it's a very healthy relationship, and we're working to do relations with sort of all the sort of key stakeholders in this similar model. So that's a good sign. You know, we have an MOA, like an agreement that will just, you know, when stuff that comes up in the recreation space to involve with mountain biking in the city sphere, that we're part of that discussion, and we're really part of the discussion. So it's not like the city's like, well, we're going to build a trail and this is where it's going to go. It's more like, okay, well, this is what we're planning on doing. This is what we're thinking. This is how we're doing it. And we've come up with strategies, like long-term strategies, which Canada was doing, or Vernon was starting some of those. But here it's like a little more like, these are sort of official documents and they're budgeted and they get city budgeted through. And so it's, you can see these things actually happening. And I'd say that's, you know, from a relationship with a city or with a council, it's the best I've heard of. I haven't worked everywhere, obviously, but it's certainly the best I've heard of in terms of that connectivity. I mean, obviously, you know, you can always ask for more as an advocate. But, you know, we recognize that we have it really good in terms of having a city that understands and gets it and understands the impact it has. And, you know, I think part of that, like flipping it in terms of like giving kudos to the club, being, you know, a substantial voting members and members of the community that are all part of the club, makes it so it's easy for the city to, you know, to do that as well. You know, like, they're like, yeah, of course I should do this. This is quite clearly important for our voters and this for our community members. So, you know, I think we have a very good relationship, and I'm super stoked that it's like that. And, you know, we try and grow that same relationship, like with, you know, Cable Bay is another bike park that's in our region. And, you know, we try and have that same relationship, grow that same relationship, you know, with the owner of that one, and same Sylvan's the other one. And we try and, like, get, you know, whatever we can to help out from a club point of view, like if it's, whether it's holding an event or just letting people know when there is bike related things going out there, not necessarily always worrying about the commercial side, but more like, just, is this good? Like, we always kind of look at it through the lens. Is this good for our members? Is this bettering biking? And as long in our region, as long as we look at, make those decisions based on that, I think we're on the right track. And I think a lot of clubs around, like, that's like, it's, I think it's really important, like when they do their sort of their corporate or their nonprofit documents, that they're, you know, they get their mission statement right. And if their mission statement is to look after the members and look after the riding community, and then if, as long as they keep referring to that, like, how do you, is the next step you're going to do going to help that? Because there's lots of times, like, I've here or in Canada, I've experienced, you know, things come up, like, could be hosting a big event, or it could be, you know, oh yeah, I want to put this on my private land, or I want to do this. And as long as you can kind of, you can look through that lens, is this actually helping out the members? And is this helping out the, making this a better place to ride? And you always sort of ask those questions. I think you kind of get, you can kind of decipher which are the right things to put your energy into.
I think you've got a unique experience that you've kind of come into a couple of different communities and taken on an advocacy role. What kind of advice would you give to somebody who's maybe moving to a new community, or maybe lives in a community and isn't involved with an advocacy group? What would you say to them?
I'd say, you know, start going to your social rides or going to local events, engage a little bit, and the rewards are fantastic. You end up with some lifelong friends. You end up having a way better riding experience. You get lots of new riding friends. And it doesn't really matter. Like, you don't have to have a set skill set to go and help out. You know, you can flip a burger. You could, you know, you could be a lawyer and help them with legal advice. You could help, you know, you could help steer a commercial enterprise they're doing. There's lots of areas, like, there's lots of areas that, you know, you don't have to be a pro biker. You don't have to be anything. You just have to have a passion to be out there and meet people. And it's, you know, I found it's the greatest way to make friends and acquaintances in your region is to get involved with your local riding club, because you can just, you know, before you know it, you know, you just have friends coming out of your, coming out of everywhere, and they're from all walks of life, and it just makes a really nice life.
You're kind of in your winter season right now, and so as you kind of transition over into summer, are things starting to kind of ramp up with the club? Like, is it in a bit of a moment of a down cycle, and things are about to kind of ramp up into a summer season?
Yeah, well, we ride year round here, so I have three kids who are competitive skiers, so I follow the snow a bit. But in Nelson, like, you'd still be riding your bike every day. You could ride your bike, which is pretty cool. It gets wetter in the winter, and then you kind of, we have a lot of clay in our soils, so, you know, you had to be hardy to do some of them. But we do have a bit of a lull in that. Our club is really active in events, so this is a low event season for us. You know, in the winter months, basically we do cyclocross as the main one, and then during the regular season, you know, we have some one-off events or some bigger events, like we had the nationals or, you know, schools, which are like, you know, all the inner schools from across the country come and compete, or we have those kind of signature big events, and or enduro or whatever. But we also have lots of local community events. Like, we have something we call the Super D, which in Canadian terms, like, the easiest one is, it's like the Fiver series or the Toonie, but it's, they're not quite the same as that. They don't, but they're, you know, part of the, well, that's one of the things that, like, I've been trying to move over from Canada in, like, trying to just make sure that the social component of those events stays up. And that's something we're kind of trying to encourage more, because that's something I really admire in the Canadian, mostly in the Canadian ones I've been to, like either Whistler or Squamish or Vernon, is like, it's heavy on the social component to get sort of all the members engaged in a really good way to build a club. Like, have that sort of, people know each other and they share an experience and they share a beer after or food or whatever. So that's, you know, that's something that Canada does really good, and New Zealand does, but it we're trying to sort of improve it.
What's coming down the pipes for the club? What's the next kind of focus? Where are you kind of headed into the next season?
Well, we've had a really interesting time in the last couple of years, in that we had some land access issues And that the land was, the land that the signature sort of Nelson Trails right out of town was built on land that then was public, then became non-public. And then it was, you know, we had, you know, really good relations with the land, the new owners too, the new land, which were Iwi, which is the Maori, one of the local Maori groups. So we have a relationship with them, but, you know, we've worked on this land access agreement with the city and the Iwi to get like just some security for the future, some security for the Iwi, some security for the city, and some security for the riders. And just those things are quite tricky because they're dealing with, you know, different, you know, the Iwi council and dealing with like the city council and dealing with the public and just trying to get to a really good space where everyone was happy with an agreement. So that took quite a while and we kind of established that. And so the exciting thing that comes out of that is like, we're in a period now that we'll get lots of, improvements, like trail improvements is something we're kind of trying to put some focus into. And so not necessarily building more, because I think you kind of, you know, I say this all the time, but like, if you want to get funding to go build a new trail or get people stoked to go build a new trail, it's super easy. But if you want to go get funding to maintain a trail, it's way harder. Like, it's like, it shouldn't be, but it is. Like, and that's the same in Canada. You know, if I want to go build a new trail in Canada, you know, once I get past the difficult part of getting the permission to build it, the actual getting some funding and getting people stoked to go do it, easy. But if you're saying, oh, that trail we have, we're going to go put some maintenance time into it and put that maintenance budget into it, that's a little bit trickier. So one of the things that like we try to do is when we're getting new builds and, you know, we get the land manager, be a city or whoever's doing it, we bring that topic up early, the maintenance topic, and like, how's this going to be funded? Is this private pay or is this volunteer maintained, or how's that going to happen? And that's one thing that I don't think either nation has that. I don't know anywhere has that quite figured out, how to get that so that it's seamless. Like you have a continuous maintenance budget that corresponds with when you build new trails and, you know, goes at it. Cause like, I don't know about you, but like sometimes you go on like an old favorite and let's say you haven't been there for 5 years or something, a new place, a place you haven't been to in 5 years, and you go ride it and you're like, this isn't what I remember it like. And then you're like, oh yeah, it's cause it's kind of rutted out and yeah, it's not very good anymore. Oh, but this new trail I rode, it was so good. Right. And that's kind of the memory of mountain biking. But if you actually were to like say, well, you know, this works in the favor of the land managers to say like, actually, why don't we put some time into maintenance on this and put some money into maintenance on this? And then you'd go back to that old trail and you say, you know what? That old trail still rocks. It's still amazing. And it's like a new trail. Like you, if you've ever been on one that's been really well maintained, you come to that conclusion, right? You're like, this is like a new trail. It's so cool. But it's not sexy. Like it's hard to sell to someone. Like someone who doesn't put their name on a trail that, you know, another company had built years ago or another group of people had built. And then, you know, it's kind of like that layer in mountain biking where it's difficult to get. And it's improving. Like we get some improvement on that, but it's certainly something that I think the whole sphere of advocacy can work on. How do we up the maintenance game so that we're not always saying we just want new? Because I think I'm the same as any other rider. I love going on a new trail. I think it's amazing. Loam all the way. But at the same note, because I've been involved in this for so long, I appreciate the land manager's point of view of like, well, you already have two trails in that region or three trails in that region. Why am I offering up my land for more scarring for another trail? And I think mountain bikers need to sort of, as a whole collective, need to say, you know what? We're going to get behind maintenance as much as we are a new build, and you can actually make an old trail feel like a new trail. Not that with less input than building a new trail, but it's not, you know, it is done somewhere, but it's certainly not the norm, and it's not the norm here. And it's not the norm in Canada with the odd exceptions. Have you found that?
Oh, absolutely. It's something I rack my brain about a lot, because I think part of it comes from, you know, maybe mountain bike culture that needs to shift of where we like the shiny new, you know, almost in the same sense that like, for all sorts of things, right? It's nicer to have a new car. It's nicer to have new clothes, you know, that kind of stuff. Consumerism culture. Yeah, exactly. But then at a same kind of conflicting point, I see land managers that struggle to do maintenance. And, you know, a big part of my advocacy work is focused on BC parks right now. And even outside of mountain biking, I'm putting a lot of my advocacy focus, personal advocacy focus on BC parks and access and hiking trails and backpacking areas and these kind of wilderness, for lack of a better term, wilderness environments that are just neglected. And they certainly struggle with volunteers, and they're more remote, that kind of thing. But there seems to be these budgets to kind of maintain or to build a new capital project, but not the same kind of budget for maintenance. And, you know, I even saw like a front country car camping provincial park here. Half of their sites, there was 100 sites, 50 of them were closed because of hazard trees, because of a pine beetle outbreak. And while that was just waiting on an arborist essentially to come in and clear it out, and in the meantime, it had been flooded and things were getting damaged because there was zero maintenance, including on the roads around this campground. They were building a new front country campground with I think 100 new sites. And it's like, where did that money come from? Yet there wasn't the money for just bringing in an arborist.
Why aren't you just putting that into maintaining your back one? Yeah, I guess that's my point. And it's one that I think, it's one that there is solutions to it, but it takes, and it's kind of like where like mountain biking came about everywhere from the same, you know, like a group of, you know, they call them rogue builders now, but they were just called builders then, would build trail on some land that wasn't theirs. And then people would ride them. And then, but the volume of people wasn't the same. And, you know, there's this kind of romantic notion that biking can still do that. It's really challenging if you look at it, because there's just so many bikers, you know, and you got to have some sort of system and some sort of plan and how you go about building and what permissions go into building. And then that, so now is kind of, I think, is a prime time everywhere for this, like the maintenance side to really come up into the forefront and say, like, you know what, we build, but we maintain, like, you know. And that should be as important, if not more important. So, I'm really hoping, you know, you ask what is our plan in the near future? And, as unsexy as it sounds, it is the biggest plan in the near future is to sort of try and get a really solid maintenance, you know, plan and actions for all our trails. And Nelson's massive, right? So we have lots of regions. And so it's important for us to like look at trails and not just like, it's easy to say, oh, maintain and the city will pay maintenance and you'll get a contractor and you're done. But the reality is there's some trails that you can maintain with volunteer groups, and it's really important to get your members out there doing stuff, because then they have buy-in for the area. They care about it. They help protect it. They, you know, you don't lose your trails, you know, because you have people that are passionate about it. They put their effort into it. But there's also trails, like some trails aren't really that good for like volunteer builds, you know. If you have a jump line, that's a terrible trail to put a volunteer build on it, you know, like a maintenance thing. You really want a pro contractor, probably going to have to get machinery in. You know, you want someone who really understands if it's a jump line. You want someone to understand how jumps work and how landings work and how do you actually get rid of stutter bumps and how proper drainage works. So it's one of those things where I think each region should go, and this is what we're hoping to do here, is go through and this is what our maintenance plan is, and this is how we're going to stick to it. This is how we're going to report it. It's, you know, it's not, as I said, it's not sexy, but I think if the net result in the end would be just a way better riding area. And I think every area should have a pretty solid plan like that. So I'd encourage anyone who's in advocacy to do the same, to get a good solid plan. It's not, as I said, it's not fun work to do necessarily. You're not like out riding a bike, you're not building a new trail, but you're making it so that there is a plan and a way to identify what your problems are and how to go forward and fix them or make them better.
How can folks learn more about the Nelson Mountain Bike Club and stay in touch?
Well, our website is probably the best place to start. Have a look at that. You know, we encourage anyone to come ride the region. And, you know, you can definitely make if you're from overseas, you know, it's definitely one of the hot spots to come if you're a biker in New Zealand. So it's, you could easily fill a week or two or three. I mean, I've filled 5 years, so you, and I'm still doing new stuff in that time span. So if you're able to finish it all in a week, then you're a bigger man than me. Like, I'll give you an idea, like what kind of something that makes it really unique. Like, for, I live right in the center of town, and from my door, I can do, I don't know, there's probably like six or seven sort of 3+ hour rides that I'm like going across like mountain ranges and doing different trails on the way down and the way up. So that's pretty unique, like to do that kind of like that kind of experience, you know, like to get up on top of a mountaintop where you're looking at a, you know, the view of the Abel Tasman Sea and then ride a trail down and you think, oh, that's just such an amazing thing. And most places would have one of those, but Nelson just has like a, like an unbelievable volume of those. And you do it when you want to link them up, you know, it's insane. You know, you could really ride your bike for days and be like, oh man, I'm very fit now, but I feel like I've only just scratched it. I'm very fit, but I haven't, you know, like we have Nelson's quite steep around it. So that much like Nelson, BC, actually, because Nelson, BC is quite steep around it too. But, you know, we have a normal mountain bike ride for people is a 300 meter climb. Like that's a normal, that's kind of like the only, we don't really have any rides that you're doing less than that. We have quite a few rides that are sort of 800 to 1,000 meter climb. And that, you know, that separates people. That certainly makes it unique and makes it, it's like, it's something that I like to do. I like to have these big rides. So for me, it's quite, I love a 15, 20 minute descent. I think that's worth it, but they always come with a price, right? You got to get up somehow.
Well, Matt, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me. I really appreciate it. It's been a great conversation.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. And thanks for helping spread the word and advocacy, because every little bit helps.
This episode of the podcast was recorded on the traditional territory of the Tsleil-Waututh, Squamish, Musqueam, and Stolo Nations. My guests joined me from the traditional territory of 8 different Maori tribes, or iwis, as they're called in the Maori language. I'll try my best to pronounce them, but it won't be perfect, so I apologize. Ngāti Kwea, Ngāti Apa Kita Ra To, Reg Atani, Ngāti Toa, Ngāti Kwota, Ngāti Rarwa, Ngāti Toma, and Tiatwa. Now, if you're curious to learn more about the traditional territory that you occupy and recreate on, then visit native-lands.ca. Like always, you can find the show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Frontlines MTB. You can also join the Facebook group at Advocates on the Frontlines of MTB. And you can send me an email or audio file to info@frontlinesmtb.com. Thank you to Flan for not only sponsoring the podcast, but also connecting me with Matt. And thanks to Jeff, Alexandra, Jacob, and Drew for your recent donations via PayPal. To become a Frontlines VIP member, to receive early info about upcoming shows, you just need to support the show via PayPal. You can find a link in the show notes. In the show notes, you'll also find links to the Nelson Mountain Bike Club. Music, as always, by Lee Rosevere. Production notes by Jennifer Pride. Artwork is created by Brandon Gallagher Watson and BGW Creative. And finally, I'm Brent Hillier. This is Frontlines. Thanks for listening, and happy trails.